from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Last Thursday, Speaker of the House John Boehner shouted his now famous, "Are you kidding me?" and launched a wall of buzz about a brawl inside the GOP. Well, today, two big players in that buzz and brawl are with us. A Tea Party stalwart who helped drive the government shutdown and says he's just begun to fight. An old Boehner ally who says hardliners have gone too far. This hour on Point, drawn swords inside the GOP and where this goes. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Republicans, were you shouting at your TV when Speaker Boehner went on the attack, shouting support for Boehner or outraged at Boehner and backing the Tea Party? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Two players in this dust-up standoff with us today. When Speaker Boehner went after Tea Party purists last week, his old friend Steve LaTourette was the person most quoted calling out amen. He's a former fellow Ohio Republican congressman with Boehner, served 9 terms in Congress until he stepped down in January of this year. Now he's president of the Washington lobbying firm McDonald Hopkins Government Strategies and president and CEO of the Republican Main Street Partnership, a group that argues for more traditional Republican politics. He joins us this hour from Washington. Steve LaTourette, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
Great to have you here. And from Washington, when Speaker Boehner attacked the hardliners, one of the men he had most in his sights was almost certainly Michael Needham, CEO of the conservative policy advocacy group Heritage Action for America, sort of a wunderkind in the GOP's Tea Party camp. And Needham hasn't been taking it all laying down. 31 years old, but driving lots of moves and fear and passion and votes on Capitol Hill. Michael Needham, welcome to you. Thanks for joining us on Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Okay, here's the tape heard around the world, or at least around the Beltway last week. Speaker Boehner last Thursday blasting outside groups, yours included, Michael, maybe yours most, for their role in the government shutdown and the defund Obamacare strategy. Boehner.
They pushed us into this fight to defund Obamacare and the shutdown of the government. But if you'll recall, the day before the government reopened, one of these groups stood up and said, well, we never really thought it would work. Are you kidding me?
And everybody says that "are you kidding me" was for you, Michael Needham. I want to look at what the speaker said last week, but give us the bigger picture, Michael. Where do you want to take the Republican Party?
Well, I think the speaker was being absurd there. Look, the Republican Party is at its best when it's the party of Ronald Reagan, standing for limited government, free enterprise, people who want to start businesses or go to their jobs and come home to their family. I think many Republicans woke up in 2001 thought that President Bush had won an election, thought that it was going to be a kind of continuation of what Ronald Reagan did for the country, and were surprised to find that K Street had taken hold of the Republican Party. And now there's a sense from, I think, many members of Congress that we're back in control. We're going to kind of let the good times roll. K Street will continue to call the shots. And the grassroots aren't taking it anymore. And I think we are one way that they're having a voice in Washington, but there's many other ways. And it's the reality of the world that we live in today.
And by K Street, you mean Washington lobbyist Steve LaTourette. Is your friend John Boehner, are you a prisoner of Washington lobbyists? I mean, you lobby from there. Are you a prisoner of a perspective that needs a Tea Party battering it down inside the GOP?
No, I don't think so. And you know, one thing I want to get clear at the beginning, because I've seen Mr. Needham quoted that there's nothing in his job description that says he's responsible for the Republican Party. Heritage Action is not the Republican Party. And I do, in fact, care deeply about the Republican Party, as I'm sure he does. But the fact of the matter is that his group, Club for Growth, Freedom Works, have engaged sort of in this fratricide, and they're not going after with the same vigor Democrats, who I think get zero or less than zero on their scorecards, and instead they're inciting inter-party violence in primary elections and are threatening to make the Republican Party a regional, marginalized party that can have a slim majority in the House of Representatives but never again elect a president of the United States and cause some candidates to blow up in Senate races, the witch in Delaware and Mr. Murdo in Indiana and other places. And you know, Speaker Boehner's frustration was I think he'd had enough. I mean, you know, the government shutdown was a stupid strategy. I mean, anybody that mapped it out and said, well, President Obama all of a sudden is going to sign a piece of legislation giving up on what you could argue was the biggest and only accomplishment of his presidency, I mean, that's just crazy. and to sell it that way to people and ask them to send you money to fight the fight and support Senator Cruz, that's what I think has the speaker frustrated, and I think he's right to be frustrated.
Michael Needham, the shutdown itself, the authorship of that shutdown is very often in Washington traced back to your doorstep. You drove it hard. It happened. Steve LaTourette says it was just stupid, and you're marginalizing the GOP. What do you say, sir?
Well, no, I think that's the wrong way to look at it. Look, the president of the United States has a view he was a go forward, and nobody claimed he was going to repeal Obamacare. But the Constitution also gives the House of Representatives the power of the purse. And James Madison argues in Federalist 58, which most constitutional conservatives still take seriously, that the reason that the House of Representatives has the power of the purse is to achieve redress of grievances for legislation that they don't like. And I think when you look at Obamacare, which is the reason that the Republicans retook the House in 2010, when you look at Obamacare, which is falling apart and was just clearly falling apart over the course of this summer with jobless claims going up, with part-time workers, full-time workers moving to part-time, with premiums going up, and now everything we've seen the last couple of months, I think Republicans should be proud of the fact that they did the courageous thing. They tried to use the power of the purse to control this law. And unfortunately, there were some Senate Republicans who were more emotionally invested in the failure of the defund strategy than they were in stopping Obamacare.
But you know when this was all over. I take your point, but you know when it was all over, the GOP had historic low ratings in the polls, 28%, single digits approval of Congress. You can see why John Boehner might not be too happy about that. He's Speaker of the House. I mean, did you have something right, in theory that was wrong in practice, Michael?
Well, it's funny to kind of unpack that statement. What everyone is saying today is that they're happy that Speaker Boehner shot us down last week because we've had too much control of the House, we've had too much influence, and now he's putting us in our place. A year ago, the Republican Party was 7 points underwater on the generic congressional ballot. Today, they're 3 points over water. And so if you've improved your standing by 10 percentage points with the face of the party being the bold conservatism of Ronald Reagan and the commitment to the free enterprise system that Ted Cruz has, then maybe that's something that we repeat. We know what happens when big entrenched interests run the Republican Party. And we saw it in 2006. We saw it, unfortunately, with this claim in 2012 that if we just didn't stick our neck out, if we didn't make ourselves the issue, that the people would rebel against Barack Obama and Mitt Romney would get to the finish line. And it didn't work. Republicans are at their best when they stand for those values that make our country great.
Steve LaTourette, Heritage Action. Michael Needham is a hero, great avatar of Ronald Reagan, just exercising reasonable redress in Congress. What's your complaint?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, Ronald Reagan would probably score below 50 on their scorecard. And it amazes me.
And they score everybody, of course, we know.
Well, yeah. they score everybody. I don't want to overplay this thing. I don't begrudge Mr. Needham, his organization. They believe what they believe. But it's out of the reality of what happens in our constitutional form of government. It's fine to quote the Federalist Paper. It's fine to talk about the power of the purse. You can talk about Article 1, Section 7 and the ability of the Congress to direct funding. But the fact of the matter is, at the end of the day, the reason that I call this strategy stupid is it was never, ever, ever going to succeed. And to engage in a fool's errand and describe the 800,000 federal workers who were displaced, and how is it conservative to kick people out of their jobs for 16 days and then pay them for not working? It just wasn't going to work, and I think somebody down there called it collateral damage. Well, I don't consider it to be collateral damage, and for me, it's not the issue of that. Did this shutdown drive down the poll numbers of the Republican Party? Look, if you're right, you're right, and let the polls be where they may. But the fact of the matter is, the Speaker told them this was a dumb strategy. It was never going to work. It was never going to be successful. He was proven right, and the blow up last week is, to quote Ronald Reagan, "Here we go again." And here we go again. On the budget deal, Mr. Needham's group and Freedom Works. Now, I have to give Mr. Needham some credit because I actually, not to promote an urban legend, but, it was widely reported and the speaker said these groups were condemning the Ryan Murray deal before it was even known what the deal was. Mm. I read Mr. Needham's statement and he says, we think we're going to be against it, but we have an open mind, not an empty mind, which is to his credit. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, it's a little bit like Wolf Blitzer trying to call Florida in 2001 before all the votes are counted. And I think that is the Speaker's frustration. You have a split form of government. He's attempting to move the ball as best he can. He's not violating conservative principles. And these groups are coming in and sending out these vote alerts and basically threatening members with primaries.
But, Steve, if Speaker Boehner was so right and they're so wrong, why didn't he step up and defy them, deny them? Why wasn't he able to turn his house the other way?
Well, because. And the because is this. You know, and he puts it rather eloquently. He is the elected leader of the Republican Conference. Now, he has opinions, and I believe he told them at the beginning of the year, the middle of the year, the end of the year, that this defund strategy, shut down the government, put us to the precipice of default, was a stupid strategy.
Why couldn't he out-argue Michael Needham?
I don't know that he's ever been in a discussion with Michael Needham.
I mean, his caucus.
Well, I'm going to tell you what. There have been, since the 2010 election, some true believers have been elected to the House of Representatives. I don't begrudge them their views, their opinions, their attitudes. But they have taken the view that they're going to deny the Speaker 218 votes out of the majority party. And when you do that, he may be the Speaker, but he's the Speaker of a non-majority. And so in our form of government, you got two choices. You either do nothing or you got to go get votes from somebody else.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the drawn swords in the GOP, John Boehner, Tea Party hardliners, and more, fighting over what the Republican Party should be for, stand for, fight for, and how that should happen. Michael Needham is with us. He is CEO of Heritage Action for America, founded back just in 2010, offshoot of the Heritage Foundation. Has made a lot of noise in Washington, been a big factor in this Congress, and it turns out, apparently, a real burr in the saddle of John Boehner, at least judging from his comment last week. Here was the end of it.
Are you kidding me?
We all heard that, and Michael Needham's outfit, not the least target of that. Steve LaTourette is with us, president of McDonnell Hopkins Government Strategies, Washington lobbying firm, and president and CEO of the Republican Main Street Partnership, close personal friend of Speaker John Boehner, who's been speaking out for, he'll tell us, but maybe less radical kind of politics, more traditional Republican kind of politics, conservative, yes, but in a more familiar way, he can tell us himself. There's been all kinds of response to this whole showdown over weeks now on Capitol Hill. This was back when it was all going on. Here was California Congressman Republican Devin Nunes in an interview with CNN on the last day of the shutdown, slamming the GOP's Tea Party faction.
When you go out and tell your constituents that we are going to just shut the government down until we get rid of Obamacare, it's just lunacy. Plain and simple.
Lunacy, but not everybody was on that beam. Here was Utah Republican Senator Mike Lee, went to the Senate floor on October 16th, last day of the shutdown, and defended the Tea Party faction.
Some say we shouldn't have fought because we couldn't win. But this country wasn't built by fighting only when victory was absolutely certain.
And the assertion here today from Steve LaTourette, Michael Needham, is that the way you're fighting is setting the Republican Party up for trouble at the polls? That you're putting the party in peril over, I don't know, ideological purity?
Well, I think we know what cost the Republican Party at the polls, and it's a big government conservatism that says big government is good government if it's our government. And we saw that during the Bush administration when they passed Medicare Part D, they passed No Child Left Behind, they passed all sorts of pieces of legislation that said if you're well-connected in Washington, D.C., if you can hire 1,000 lobbyists, if you can figure out how to make Sarbanes-Oxley work for you, we'll vote for it. And if you're a real Main Street Republican and you're out there trying to start a small business or you're trying to have an entrepreneurial venture that disrupts a big Fortune 50 company, there's no room for you. And that's what's going on in Washington, D.C. That's why the vast majority of the American people are kind of sick of it. They're sick of the fake food fights that politicians engage in. And they want an honest, fact-based policy debate. And I think what we've been doing for the last 4 years, including this week with the Ryan Murray budget, is having trying to have an honest, fact-based conversation. And I think that the ridiculousness that's going on is actually people like the Speaker and Karl Rove who go out there and turn these into ad hominem, who's good for the party, who's bad for the party. The best thing for the party is to have a civil, policy-based debate about what's best for the country.
Steve LaTourette, I'm going to bring that to you, but so many listeners want to join us. Let me bring a couple in first, and I'll bring that to you. Craig in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Craig, you're on the air. What do you see out there, Craig?
Hi, Tom. My experience with the Tea Party is that
they seem to be functioning almost as if they were in an occult, and they need to be deprogrammed.
Where are you coming from, Craig? Are you a Republican, Democrat, something else?
I'm a Republican. I've been on the county platform committee for 10 years, and every time we have a county meeting, their main thing that they say is that you're out of order. They want to use Robert's Rules of Order. They want to become experts so that they can just tell everybody they're out of order.
What's the point of that, Craig?
Well, they did it at the state convention. The state convention went for until 2 o'clock in the morning because they were debating every word in the platform. They just don't know what it means to seek common ground, to work together as fellow Americans for the good of the country. They're ridiculous. They don't even know what reality is.
Craig, stick with us. Michael Needham, speak straight to your Republican fellow Republican in Iowa. What do you say to that? Cult members need to be deprogrammed. He's talking about your people.
Well, I think it's an example of an ad hominem attack. But look, I think that we are better off as a country the more informed all of our citizens are about policy, about process, and having robust debates. Within that context, I'm a big fan of compromise. But compromise is just a word, and it should be compromise that moves us in the right direction. And just as people said that Barack Obama was promising change, but you could either have good change or bad change, you can either have good compromise or bad compromise. And I think the way to make that determination, what's good or what's bad for the direction of the country, is to have as many people as possible who are well-informed or educated about policy, about different ways to use the process to advance their objectives, and that good, robust debate is what democracy is about.
Craig in Cedar Rapids, what do you say? Michael Needham just wants, and the Tea Party just want a good debate.
Well, I want it to quit being about power, money, and votes. I want us to work together seeking communication, collaboration, possible consensus to make things better for everybody in the country and to teach others to do the same. We got to start working, functioning at a higher level instead of the way we're functioning.
Craig, I appreciate your call. Steve LaTourette, I imagine you would sympathize with Craig's view. He's dealing with Tea Party folks firsthand there.
Well, with one exception, you know, I retired from the Congress in January after 18 years, and a lot of Tea Party chapters in my district back in Ohio, and 99.9% of the people who belong to the Tea Party are aggrieved Americans who just, I mean, if you think about what it stands for, taxed enough already, who can disagree with that? And I don't agree with Mr. Needham's observation that a good, healthy debate on issues is good for the party. But what's happened here is not a good, healthy debate. The tenth of a percent that aren't normal people, I guess, are people who are drawn to a successful platform. Nobody can argue that after 2010 that the Tea Party wasn't a successful, powerful force within the Republican Party, but not the Republican Party. But you have Ron Paul supporters, you have libertarians, you have LaRouches come in and they advocate things that have nothing to do with being a Republican, really have nothing to do with being taxed enough already. And they drive some of these, I think the caller from Iowa, drive some of these state conventions to places where they needn't be. And for me, you know, where Heritage, and let me just say this, Heritage Foundation, when I came to Washington 20 years ago, love them, they do great work. Heritage Action as a wing, however, where they lost me was during the fiscal cliff on Plan B. And if you remember, all of the Bush-era tax cuts of 2001 and 2003 were set to expire.
We're talking a year ago now, over the holidays. Yeah.
And the president had just won re-election, and he was beating our brains out in the media on, well, you know, rich people, if they could just pay a little bit more and pay their fair share. We were losing the message war badly. In an attempt to salvage something, and then you remember Mitch McConnell makes a deal with Harry Reid, and Rich is defined at $400,000 or $450,000. Boehner comes down to the Republican conference in HC5, a room in the Capitol, and he comes up with Plan B. And Plan B is, and the way he describes it is, listen, our job is to save as many Americans as possible on January the 1st from getting a tax increase. And by setting the ceiling, or the floor, at $1 million, it was 99.82% of Americans would not have received a tax increase on January the 1st. Heritage Action, Club for Growth, Freedom Works sent out their alerts. Enough members defected. We couldn't do Plan B. And that's fine, too, if that's their opinion. But at the end of the day, what they don't ask is what's Plan C? And plan C was we either pass the lousy deal that Mitch McConnell made with Harry Reid, or guess what? If we do nothing, everybody in America gets a tax increase. I don't understand the thinking, and I was excited about coming on today because maybe that can be explained.
Michael Needham, maybe you can. I mean, are you willing to drive right off the rails is kind of the argument that Steve's making there, you know, to protect that last point, what, 0.08%?
Well, I would just remind the congressman of Speaker Boehner's own words in the Wall Street Journal after the fiscal cliff debate, where he said that the mistake that the House conference made was sitting down and trying to negotiate with the president prior to him ever putting his plan on the table. And so in that debate, the House of Representatives had put forth their plan in August of last year. And they said, we want to extend the Bush tax cuts. I would have gone one step further, and I think at some point during the 112th Congress, if the Ways and Means Committee had marked up a fundamental tax reform package that allowed us to show our conservative Republican values, we would have had two options out there. And we could have said, look, we have a modern tax code that we think is better for all Americans, and we're happy to talk to the president about that if he comes forth with his plan. Or we're happy to extend the Bush tax cuts, which the country has experienced for the last 10, 12 years. And we're happy to talk to the president about that once he comes out with his plan. But the speaker himself said that the real mistake that was made in that whole exchange was sitting down and having negotiations with the president who never put his plan forward.
But you know, people talk about the perfect being the enemy of the good. And you have pushed for something that really fits the mold you'd like to see. Have you pushed it too far? That's Steve's point.
No, I think that the way you have negotiation and compromise is that both sides come to the table with their principles and their plan. And I think that in the case of the fiscal cliff debate, the House of Representatives did that. They wanted to extend their plan. And the president should have been forced to come forward with his plan. And then once both sides show their principles, which allow the American people to understand what are the principles of the modern Republican Party, I'll be honest, I have no clue what the modern Republican Party stands for. Because it hasn't been clearly articulated. They understand what one party stands for. They understand what the other party stands for. Every 2 years, every 4 years, they get to have a referendum on which one they like. But it also then allows negotiators at the negotiating table to say, all right, let's now sit down and see how we can reconcile our differences. There have been very few times over the past 3.5 years where the House of Representatives has had that first volley coming out of them being something that shows the true Republican values that Ronald Reagan espoused.
John Boehner,
and I think that's disappointing.
Yeah, John Boehner last week saying it's just gone too far. Credibility is lost here. Speaker Boehner.
Frankly, I think they're misleading their followers. I think they're pushing our members in places where they don't want to be. And frankly, I just think that they've lost all credibility.
We've got callers all over the map here. Steve LaTourette, I'll come to you. But Sheldon in Columbia, South Carolina. Sheldon, you're on the air. What do you see? What do you think?
Hi, Tom. Hoorah for Speaker Boehner. I'm an independent. I missed this nation's first Civil War. I don't plan to be in another one. Former Senator Jim DeMint, it was in the Heritage Foundation, and they stopped the president's plan of restarting the government after the shutdown. Why? It's indefensible. Some of the people that were working and getting paid, others were working and not getting paid until the government was restarted by the president and Speaker Boehner. Craig had it right. The Tea Party are like a cancer. They added to the division inside the GOP, which added to the division in our nation when they came here to South Carolina. You know, they added to a more messed up GOP party. Like I say, I have no love lost to Speaker Boehner or the GOP and all that, but it's messed up. They're like sort of cannibalizing. It's like you have Rhino Republicans, you know, Republicans in name only. Then you've got the Tea Party hardcore type.
Yeah, right on down. And we hear it. You're not for that dynamic. I want to get one more here, if I may. Sheldon, Tony, Winchester, Massachusetts. Tony, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Hi, Tom. I agree that the budget deal is probably the best deal that they can get on, given the circumstances of the divided Congress. However, what I'm troubled by is the Republicans attacking other Republicans. I don't see Democrats attacking their hardliners like our demagogic Senator Elizabeth Warren. I don't hear her being criticized by the Democrats, by her fellow Democrats.
What about hardliners attacking mainstream Republicans, Tony? Doesn't it go both ways lately?
Yeah, but, you know, you don't attack your base voters. The Tea Party people, while they may have made some tactical or even strategic errors, are still your core Republican supporters. They deserve respect. And you don't. The Democrats are more successful than Republicans because they hold their people together.
Well, lately, anyway. There was a time when that might have been argued differently. But I got it, Tony, and I appreciate your call. Steve LaTourette, what about Tony's assertion that the Tea Party is your party's base. And when you attack it, you're attacking your strongest kind of foundation voter.
Well, that really is the point here. And at the end of the day, our group, the Main Street Partnership, founded by Emil Houghton, who's still today the only president and chairman of a CEO of a Fortune 500 company to ever serve in the Congress, which really should tell you all you need to know about the Congress. But so we just want to be Republicans, and we want to coexist with Heritage Action. We want to coexist with Club for Growth. We want to coexist with the Tea Party. We see the Tea Party and the conservative bloc of the Republican Party being an important part of the Republican Party.
But you're accusing them of fratricide.
Well, they are. I mean, and that's the point. We want to be left alone. You don't see center-right Republican organizations like mine going out and actively recruiting candidates to wipe out or attack or defeat in Republican primaries more conservative candidates. But consistently, that's going on, particularly on the Senate side, and I would argue if it wasn't for the efforts of these folks, we would have, as a party, functional control of the United States Senate, over 50 votes. But that's been denied to us by Sharon Angle, Richard Murdo, Todd Akin, the witch in Delaware.
The losers.
And on, so, and on, and on.
But why shouldn't they try? Isn't that the essence of democracy? You've got a belief, you plant your flag, and you fight for it.
Well, listen, and that's the fiction, that we don't want to fight. That's a bunch of baloney. I mean, we fight and fought every day in the United States Congress. But the fact of the matter is, where I disagree with one of the callers is, it really is fruitless to suit up your team, get them ready to go, pump them up with adrenaline, charge up a hill that you know you're never, ever, ever going to take. And so going back to, I heard what Mr. Needham said about mm-hmm. the fiscal cliff, but I want to go back to that. Mm. So I don't disagree with him. But you know what? I would say it was his bunch that forced us to lay out our marker first and so forth and so on. Negotiating with the president was a very bad idea. But at the end of the day, that doesn't answer the question that if you rejected Plan B, what were you left with? And so it's not okay to say we need to, you know, support our principles and get out there and do things. The net effect was there are only two choices. Now, you can say we didn't get there the right way, it was bad strategy. But on that night, two choices. Take the bad deal negotiated by McConnell and Reid, or have taxes go up on every American by not putting Plan B forward. And I just don't, I've tried to understand it. I don't understand it.
When the chips are down, you're not serious. You're too radical for the system is kind of the argument there, Michael.
Well, I think that the reason we were in that situation was that the Ways and Means Committee had not been willing to take on the special interests that are in favor of the entrenched tax code. And so there wasn't a inspiring Republican modern tax code that you could fall back on. And then prior to getting to the Plan B situation, the Speaker had started to preemptively negotiate with the president before he'd been forced to put his cards on the table. And I think that if you get those initial steps right, you're looking at a different situation. But I also think Steve's being a little bit disingenuous when he says that it's the Tea Party that's always knocking other parts of the Republican faction. Steve himself has said that he wants to knock the snot out of the Tea Party in the upcoming elections. Personally, I gave money to Scott Brown both times he ran. As has been pointed out, I worked for Rudy Giuliani. I'm perfectly open to there being certain parts of the country that require a different flavor of Republican. What the other side isn't willing to do is acknowledge that a guy like Ted Cruz should be the leader of the Republican Party coming from a state like Texas. And there needs to be a reciprocal relationship in the Republican Party.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the drawn swords in the GOP, John Boehner, the Tea Party hardliners, and more, fighting over what the Republican Party should be, stand for, fight for, and how it should do that. We've got a big leader in that camp, Michael Needham, with us this hour, 31 years old, CEO of Heritage Action for America, and they have swung a big stick in Washington in the last couple years. He was at the heart of the push to shut down the government over defunding Obamacare and took a lot of heat last week and earlier from John Boehner and others for that. But he's right there making his argument. Steve LaTourette is with us, 9-term congressman, old friend of John Boehner out of Ohio, now president, CEO of the Republican Main Street Partnership. They want to bring back a little more mainstream kind of Republican Party politics. And, of course, this morning, The vote for cloture has passed on that budget bill that got John Boehner up in arms last week when there was pushback on it. So it looks like that bill worked out by Paul Ryan and Patty Murray will become the law of the land. It'll be the budget for the next couple of years. Steve LaTourette, that is a kind of compromise for both sides. Is that good news to you or bad news?
Well, it's good news not because of what's in the bill. I mean, you know, every speech I'm sure that they just gave in the Senate and every speech in the House, whether Republican or Democrat, is this isn't the bill that I would have chosen to write. But the fact of the matter is government by sequestration was a horrible idea. And for Republicans, it had to do with defense cuts that were just on autopilot. And with the Democrats, it had to do with social programs that were on autopilot. So the fact that they were able to come up with, and this wasn't even small ball. I mean, this is ping pong ball, $85 billion over 2 years. But it's significant in that, despite its detractors on the right and the left, it received a big vote in the House of Representatives. I assume it'll receive a big vote in the Senate. And it breaks this cycle of management by crisis. And you know, the Constitution is a brilliant document. Our form of government is a brilliant form of government. And it works when people let it work, not when it just sort of lurches and so forth and so on. And so if you're in business, how can you plan if you don't know what your taxes are going to be, what your expenses are going to be, what your health care is going to be? You can't just hop from time to time to time. And so now, when this passes, the Appropriations Committees will be able to write bills that conform with the number. It's higher than the Republicans wanted in their budget resolution, lower than the senators. But that's the way functional government works. I do want to just take a moment of personal privilege because I tried to be pleasant before. And I didn't want to misquote Michael on, because he was being blamed for condemning the deal before it came out. And I read his quote.
We heard it.
Well, I never said I wanted to knock the snot out of the Tea Party. That reference is that we're going to get in the face and knock the snot out of groups like his and Club for Growth that continue to put these Manchurian candidates that are not electable against center-right Republicans who are good Republicans, that these groups have no imprimatur to define who's a good Republican and who is not a good Republican. And, you know, there's a reason. We don't have one Republican representative in New England. We've gone from like 12 to 3 in New York. And it's not because we don't have Republicans. It's because we don't have Republicans who can win elections based upon some of the principles that Republicans in other parts of the country have.
Point of privilege taken and heard. Michael Needham, he doesn't want to knock the snot out of Tea Party candidates. He wants to knock the snot out of you, your organization. Right. And he thinks he says you're destroying the GOP's electoral prospects.
Well, look, I agree with Steve that I don't have the right to define who a good Republican is or a good conservative is, and I've never tried. I think we do have the right to put our point of view out there, say that on the Ryan Murray deal, we think it raises spending, it raises taxes, and we're against it, and try to prompt conversations between constituents and their elected official. And I think that's healthy for democracy, and that's what we're trying to do. But if we're going to be fair, it's the Tea Party, it's the anti-establishment wing of the Republican Party that is responsible for Marco Rubio being the senator from Florida, that's responsible for Ted Cruz, who was outspent 20-1, being the senator from Texas, who was given a primetime spot at the GOP convention because he's an exciting new face for the party. That's responsible for Nikki Haley being the governor from South Carolina when she was the number 4 choice behind an attorney general, a lieutenant governor, and a sitting congressman of the D.C. establishment, being the exciting face of the Republican Party down in South Carolina. In general, when the Tea Party, or when the anti-establishment wing of the Republican Party loses, they still go out. They work for the establishment candidate that won. They show up at the polls. When it's the moderates who take their balls and consistently go home. So when Lugar loses to Murdoch, he refuses to endorse. Charlie Crist loses to Marco Rubio, and he changes parties and becomes a Democrat. Link Chafee loses and changes party and become a Democrat. Lisa Murkowski loses and she runs a writing.
Yeah, we got it. I got that list. Steve LaTourette, they're the real party, and you just don't like it, and you're not playing ball.
Well, look, they're not the party. They are an important faction of the party, as I said before. I have respect for them and their positions, but they are not the Republican Party. And the fact of the matter is, if you look at the results of 2012, President Obama should not have been reelected with unemployment where it was, and he was reelected. And the fight and the discussion, and I know Michael has an opinion on this, but the fight within the party is they would argue it's because we weren't conservative enough and we weren't bold enough and so forth and so on. I would argue that in order to win a national election, you need more than angry 57-year-old white guys in South Carolina and below the Mason-Dixon line. And you have to attract other voters that don't necessarily hew to some of the messages. Ted Cruz's message is fine in Texas. Rubio's fine in Florida. They don't play so well in Massachusetts. When I got here, we had two Republicans, Peter Blute and Peter Torkelson, from Massachusetts. We had two in Maine. We had two in New Hampshire. We don't have any anymore. If you're
what
going
about
to be
Ohio,
a national party,
your home turf? I mean, you got to have more than New England. Of course, you got nothing there, but it's got to play wider than that.
Well, it is. It is. And at the moment, it's 16 members of Congress, and I think it's 12-4 Republican in a swing state. But people would argue, and somewhat correctly, that a lot of that has to do with who draws the districts. And like to beat up the Republicans in Ohio, but Illinois did the same thing, and they wiped out a bunch of Republicans by making Chicago the hub of a wheel. And what's being said on this program today, I couldn't agree with more, that it's healthy to have a party that has different viewpoints. We shouldn't be like peanut butter, homogenized, all the same. We should have different viewpoints. We should have discussions. But at the end of the day, we should figure out how to move forward a Republican agenda and not have this internal strife where people do. I hear what Michael said, but the fact of the matter is, I mean, where did the term rhino come from? I mean, you know, it's a pejorative term that is used for people that other people within the party believe are not good Republicans.
Michael Needham, Steve Letterette says you're pushing for management by crisis, or it's what you've created in your wake. Do you embrace that? Does management by crisis work for your vision or your goals somehow?
Well, look, I think that if we don't like the system of government that we have, which is annual appropriation bills that Congress is responsible for passing, we should ask what's the alternative, and it's government on autopilot. If we don't like having a debt limit, which we chose in 1913 to institute as an alarm bell that goes off in the House when stuff gets out of – when you're spending too much money and you have too much debt, then we should repeal the debt limit. But we should be honest that we want to be on autopilot and not have a fire alarm in the House. And I think that's a defensible position. It's one that I disagree with. But that's the natural implication of what those who are saying that are arguing. But if we're going to have to go back to what the congressman just said, a robust conversation within the party, we need the House of Representatives. We need the various committees on the representatives in the House to have the willingness to have that robust conversation on. So I'm a big admirer of what Congressman Jeb Hensarling is doing on the Financial Services Committee, where he's looking at Fannie and Freddie and saying, how can we reform them? He's looking at Dodd-Frank and saying, how can we replace it with true bankruptcy reform? And we've seen very little of that outside-the-box innovative thinking that conservatives expect out of the Republican Party from any other committee.
But our caller from Iowa says there seems to be an impulse here that is just against, what was it Craig said, consensus, against collaboration, against communication. I mean, does it boil down to a my way or the highway thing that may mean paralysis and a party or a country in trouble?
No, it boils down to frustration with the Republican Party that will blink, right? When we look at this, the assumption in October was there is no chance the president of the United States will blink on changing current law, Obamacare. Yet there is an assumption that the congressman himself has talked about today that come January, Republicans were going to blink on the sequester. The sequester is a better – it's imperfect, but it's a better deal for America than the deal that's going to pass this week through the Senate. And because it's known by everybody in Washington, D.C. and most Americans that the Republican Party will just blink on their principles of low spending, we consistently lose.
Let me go to Stephen in Washington, D.C. Stephen, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I find myself torn in between this argument right now. I'm a young conservative working in Washington, D.C., originally from Ohio, so I'm a fan of former Congressman Steve Letterette. But my priority as a young conservative is winning an election, winning elections, period. Yet I love how Heritage Action fights for the things I believe in. However, I find from the discussions I have with other conservative and liberal friends is that Heritage seems to have crossed the line between being an effective fighter for conservative principles and being effective at helping Republicans win elections across the country. Like, I know we can win elections in Tea Party red state areas, but you know, I want to win. I want to get Republicans in majorities and in the White House. And I'm afraid that Heritage may have lost sight of how to best do that.
Yeah,
and
Stephen, we've got it. I appreciate your calling from Washington. Michael Needham, I mean, there it is again, the charge that Stephen's sympathetic but afraid that you'll take the party right off the rails. Or is there a strategy here to, I don't know, take things way out in some direction, even management by crisis, because that redounds to your principles benefit eventually somehow? What about it, Michael?
Well, the best thing the Republican Party can do to win at the polls is show that it understands the status quo is unacceptable, and it's having a robust policy debate between different people with different points of view, and Heritage Foundation has one of them.
But our caller says you take it right off the map to where you won't win majorities, so you won't pass your agenda.
I just don't think it's true. I think that if you look at what Jeb Hensarling is doing on the House Financial Services Committee, he's saying we have a problem with Fannie and Freddie. And I don't think his bill is absolutely perfect, but it's incredibly good, and it's got a lot of good ideas in there. It's the type of thing that shows that we're a party that's looking for solutions in the future.
But you've got a Congress with a single-digit approval rating and almost nothing done this year, and people worried about that as well. Mike in Hartford, Connecticut. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Just a statement, more or less just a statement from Mr. Needham. Very smart young guy you are, and I'm an independent, and I like a lot of conservative principles, and I like a lot of what you promote. But one thing I find a little bit funny is that you keep bringing up the name of Ronald Reagan all the time, and it seems like sort of a popularity play. You're trying to mobilize people behind that name because Ronald Reagan was a negotiator and a consensus builder. And you guys, even though I like a lot of what you do, you're just not. There's nothing Reagan-esque about anything that I can see that you guys do.
Mike, I appreciate your call. We're talking about these drawn swords in the GOP. Steve Lotteret, I'll give that one to you. Michael Needham came right out of the gates embracing Ronald Reagan, the standard of Ronald Reagan. Our caller's not buying it. What do you say about these groups' embrace of the Reagan legacy?
Well, listen, I think I said it earlier. Ronald Reagan would not receive a very good score on the Heritage Action scorecard. And, people have selective memories, and this isn't limited to Republicans or Democrats or Heritage or Main Street. But everybody, and Ronald Reagan is a hero in the conservative community for a number of the things that he did, including taking the Carter-era horrible tax rates of 70% down to something more reasonable. But what they don't want to remember is that when he discovered that those tax cuts caused a deficiency in the amount of money necessary to run the government, he also presided over the largest tax increase, 11 tax increases, during his presidency. And so if you're going to invoke the name of Ronald Reagan, you have to talk about all of Ronald Reagan. And Ronald Reagan, look, he was a conservative. I think he was a great president. And he tried to move the country in the direction he wanted it to. But he was a realist. And that really is what I'm trying to talk about. You have to operate within the system that you were given. It doesn't mean you don't fight. It doesn't mean you blink. It doesn't mean anything else. What it does mean is you have to achieve the achievable. Or, as the speaker likes to say, you're just a guy out for a walk.
Michael Needham, you repeatedly present yourself as the party of ideas. Let's just have the big debate, the champion of ideas. And you came right out painting, everybody else basically on Capitol Hill as prisoners of big money. We know big money has a huge influence there, and we talk a lot about the dangers of that. But is your group really so exempt from that? I mean, you got $500,000 from the Koch brothers in your kitty. Don't you have moneyed interest behind you as well?
Well, look, I think there's 50,000 Americans around the country who believe in what we're doing, and they write checks to support our cause, and we're grateful for all of them. But what Ronald Reagan was in the 1980s was a politician who was willing to push the envelope as far to the conservative side as he reasonably could, as a politician existing in an environment that was very different than it is today. And because of the strides that he made, future politicians were allowed to build upon that. And what we need today is a Republican Party that continues to push the envelope. Chairman Ryan gets credit for his budget, which pushes the envelope on premium support. And at the time when it came out, a lot of Republicans were saying, oh, no, this is going to be terrible. The Democrats are going to run ads about us pushing Granny off the cliff. But we won the debate. And we need to find more opportunities to win the debate rather than doing what, for example, the House Agriculture Committee has done, which is take farm policies, agriculture policies that we've had for 60 years in this country, that the speaker rightly calls a Soviet-style socialism, and just continue them. And that's boring to Americans. And it's continuing a status quo that they know is broken. And so we need to be pushing the envelope towards conservatism, towards our values, just like Ronald Reagan did 30 years ago.
Steve Lotteret, who's winning the framing game here? Who's winning the loyalty, follow us game on Capitol Hill? I mean, John Boehner was speaking out last week, but he went an awful lot of weeks without doing that. Tea Party has pushed the goalpost on the debate in lots of directions. Are you the, I don't know, the receding rump of the GOP? Are they the future, Steve?
Well, I think they certainly hope that they are. But again, you know, going to your other caller, Steve, from Ohio, is a nice moniker, a good state. I got to tell you that's the point. And I don't disagree with pushing the envelope. I don't mean, but let me give you an example of what these guys are doing. I think Jeb Hensarling's doing great work, too. But these guys lard up bills with things that are, it's not going to get one Democrat. You can do that, but then you have to show up and give the Speaker 218 votes. These guys are crafting horrible bills like the transportation bill and then walking away from them. You can't do that.
And yet it's done, and yet it's the way business has been going on. We'll see what happens on the other side of the Boehner outburst. Michael Needham has said it's the Speaker just setting Congress up, bad guys, good guys, for an immigration reform debate next year. We'll be watching. Michael Needham, CEO of Heritage Action for America, joining us today from Washington. Thanks for being here, Michael.
Thanks for having me, Steve. Enjoy the conversation.
Steve LaTourette, Republican Main Street Partnership President and CEO. Thank you, Steve, for joining us.
Tom, thank you, and Michael, it was a pleasure.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.